to the Casey Kowar Show, a celebration of words. I'm pleased today to have as my guest George Pelecanos. George Pelecanos has recently written his 13th novel, Drama City, published by Little Brown, which will be in bookstores on March 22nd of 2005. Mr. Pelecanos is a screenwriter, an independent film producer, an award-winning journalist, a producer of the HBO hit series The Wire, and the author of a best-selling series of novels set in and around Washington, D.C., where he lives with his wife and children. And George, before we get started, I'd like to thank Miriam Parker and Marlena Bittner at Time Warner, because they're kind of some of the unsung heroes to get a lot of these things put together and don't get a lot of recognition. I'd like to recognize them as we start this interview, because they do a lot of hard work for everybody.
Yeah, and for me too, as you should recognize them. They're very nice people as well.
Yeah. George, when I started reading your novels, which was fairly early on, I'm interested in, as in all good crime series, most of the writers pick a city to set their novels in. In Washington, D.C., obviously, is the one that you have chosen and has become an important part of the series. And when you started with Washington, D.C., did you know you were going to stay there for the whole series?
No, in the beginning, I just wanted to write one book. And my intention was really to write about the other side of the city that wasn't really represented in any literature that I knew of, detective or otherwise. You know, all the books about Washington are either about Washington society, or they're about government, and or they're military thrillers or political thrillers, that sort of thing. And that's a very small, it's actually a minuscule part of the city. There's a huge population here, and geographically there's a huge part of the city that is made up of people who have lived here for generations, came up from the south, and they are not transients, as is so often mistakenly describes our people, you know, as transients. No, they're not. They've been here for a long time, and they're not going anywhere. So I just wanted to write one book. But as I got going and I saw that I was going to make a career out of this, I also sort of figured out that there was so much to write about, and I would just continue to write what I knew, because I've never lived anywhere else, and I don't have the kind of imagination that would allow me to set a book in the Ozarks or space, you know, something like
mm-hmm.
that.
Before we talk about Drama City, I'd like to, one of my favorites books that you wrote was called The Sweet Forever in 1998, and I thought that has the elements of what I would call a classic George Pelecanos novel, which is, it has an intriguing plot, it has excellent dialogue. The music is an important part of the story, and in this one you weave sports into it as well.
Yep.
And when you began writing the series, when did music start becoming an important part of a George Pelecanos novel?
Well, the very earliest novels were the Nick Stefanos books, which were written in the first person, and generally, especially in the first book, were autobiographical in that this character started out to be a guy quite a bit like me, and then he went one way and I went another. But his musical taste were my musical taste also. I was writing a lot about punk rock that had come out of Washington and so on, you know, which I was listening to. When I got to the later on with King Sucker Man in the 70s and so on, I started doing something a little bit different and trying to make it more organic to the plot and to the characters. And so after that, I was talking about music that would be playing in places where I was writing the scenes, and it would be music that these characters would be listening to, and not necessarily music that I was into or that I knew very well,
mm-hmm.
Which meant that I had to go out and educate myself in a lot of cases. You know, I think it is much more organic to the novels now, and that's the ambition, is to make it even more so. I don't want to just list songs or anything that I like. The Sweet Forever was first two rounds of the NCAA tournament. And so you had a book that was basically set on a weekend, and it was a ticking time bomb. And it made it easy to construct a thriller like that for me because I was locked into this format. And I also knew that the book was going to end with the, this isn't to give anything away because it's a historical event.
Yes.
That it would end with the death of Len Bias, which
right.
was a shocking and unfortunately very memorable event in this city that people just always remember, even though it's now almost 20 years gone.
Yes, and I think that's one of the beautiful parts of the Sweet Forever is that you described the tournament, and at the end of the book, you have Kara sees Stefanos with his arm around a young black boy, and they're watching Lenny Bias at the draft day, and they're wondering why they're showing this as a replay and not showing, you know, all the beautiful play that he had exhibited during the tournament.
And right, that the kid's got tears streaming down his face.
Yeah.
You know, I don't actually say what happened, but you know.
Yeah.
It was like that. You know, Len Bias was, it's not an exaggeration to say that he would have given Jordan a run for his money. He was that good. There was nobody up on his level except for Jordan.
Yeah, I agree. And it was such a shock when he died, and it kind of tied the Sweet Forever, the kind of the invincibility of the cocaine that was going around at the time, and you described the club scene very well, and how everybody was just kind of doing it. It just didn't seem as dangerous.
People were just having a good time. They didn't really understand what a horrible drug that could be. And in fact, you know, I wanted to kind of set it tied to Bias also because, you know, people have this misconception that he was a drug user or something like that. No, he wasn't a drug user. He was like everybody else in that time. Not everybody, but a lot of people who was just trying it, you know, one night. And he had just been signed, and he was celebrating. And he did what was reported to be a gram at once. And he had mixed it up in some Coca-Cola and drank it. And his heart stopped.
Yeah.
But this was not a guy who was using drugs, and you know, he wasn't using drugs during the season with Maryland or anything like that. It could have been anybody I knew at the time.
Exactly.
And that's the tragedy of it, you know, among many other tragedies.
Exactly.
It was just a mistake he made.
Yeah, and he was a beautiful player.
Absolutely.
Now I've noticed that to skip ahead to the wire for a moment, which I didn't say we were going to do, but we'll do for a second. In The Wire, you deal more with heroin, which is a much more dangerous drug. And there's really there's nothing good that you can say about heroin, and there's nothing good that you can say about what goes on in the neighborhoods of The Wire when it comes to the drugs that are distributed there. And is this something you've seen, George, in Washington, D.C.? Well, The Wire takes place in Baltimore, but it could just as easily, I would imagine, be Washington, D.C.
Heroin's made a comeback. And, you know, there was a time when crack was destroying everything, but crack fell out of favor for the simple reason that a lot of users just, you know, they perished from it. There wasn't a market for it anymore. And the culture changed, too. If you listen to kids, there's no more bigger insult than to call somebody a crackhead.
Mm-hmm.
There's nothing, absolutely nothing cool about smoking crack, so nobody wants to do it anymore unless you're already addicted to it. Heroin is a little bit of a different situation. You know, being out there a little bit, I've run into people who have been heroin users for 20, 25 years, and they have jobs. They go to church on Sunday, and they come home at night to their families and that sort of thing. It's a real slow ride down. It's not the kind of thing where, you know, if you take your first shot of heroin six months later, you're going to be found dead in a shooting gallery.
Mm-hmm.
So it's a much more insidious drug, and the market life for it is longer, and there's always going to be people trying it because they know that it's not instantaneous death or anything like that. It's a high.
Yeah, and you and I were born in the same year, and it seems that when I grew up, I knew heroin meant death, and it seems like that message has been kind of diluted over time, unfortunately. And
that's true, isn't it? It's our generation that was the last taboo. You know, you would never pop a needle in your arm, right?
No.
Do everything else, try everything else. I'm speaking for myself now.
Right, me too.
But that was the line you never crossed. You never even thought about it.
No, and it's sad to see what is happening out there. Well, George, let's talk about Drama City. And the story centers around Lorenzo Brown, and he has just got done doing 8 years in the pen. And why don't you tell us a little bit about Lorenzo Brown, the character, and what attracted you to him as you began writing Drama City?
I was just reading a lot about all the thousands of people in D.C. alone that were coming back out on the street. You know, these are all people that were, many of them were incarcerated during the big drug epidemic that was here in the late 80s and early 90s. And now they were coming back out. And they were generally coming out to a world that was not going to welcome them with open arms. Many of their families have turned their backs on them. They are, many of them are unemployable. Job market is horrible to begin with. It's hard for straight people to get jobs. And so, yeah, you begin to wonder, well, what's going to happen to all those people? Because many of them seem to go back immediately to the old neighborhoods again, too. And there they find, they're going to find the same old temptations and the same kind of small number of options that lead them to easy money and so on. So you've got a problem, and you've got an inherent conflict set up in that problem. I'm talking about from the perspective of a fiction writer.
Mm-hmm.
And then I read an article about these guys that they were training in prison to work with animals.
Yes.
And for Dogs for the Blind and Companions for Elderly and so on. And they found that these guys had a lower rate of recidivism. So that took me on another journey to the Humane Society in D.C. and I talked to the woman who runs it, and she said that I asked her, would you hire a guy out of prison who would work with animals? Would you hire him to be an enforcement officer? And she said yes, as long as he wasn't a murderer or a rapist or something like that. And keep in mind, most of these guys that are in prison are in for drug offenses.
Correct.
Not in for violent crime. So there you go, I had a book. That's a perfect setup for a book. Guy comes out of prison trying to be straight, living in the neighborhood with all the old temptations, but he's trying to do something good out there in the community. And it was an easy one for me to write at that point.
Yeah, and Lorenzo, his dog is Jasmine, and he really develops a very close relationship with his dog. And I'm very familiar with the program you're talking about. I've done some work with a program called Canine Companions for Independence, and they do some dog training in the institutions, and I think it's a wonderful thing. And Lorenzo learns a lot about life through the dogs that he meets as he goes on his rounds, first with the Animal Rescue League, doesn't he?
Yeah, it's a journey for him. There's obvious parallels to the dogs that he's coming in contact with and the people that he's going to be dealing with in the book that kind of pull him over to that dark side. But it's a way that he finds a purpose in life, and he really finds his humanity through this work. And what I'm proud of in the book is that I do deliver the goods in the end of the book in terms of the people that are looking for a good crime novel. There's quite a bit of action delivered, let's say, without giving anything away.
Right.
But I don't allow him to. I don't allow him to fall.
Right.
And it's important to me, you know, at this point in my life, not to slip into that just to, you know, write a revenge book or anything like that, or a vigilante book. The one good thing about getting older is that I think you get smarter, you know, and your perspective changes, obviously, and you know, the dark side of things doesn't look that attractive to you anymore, at least as much as it did.
Yes, I agree. And one of the things that I found interesting in Drama City, and this does spill over into The Wire as well, is that you use Narcotics Anonymous as a way for some of the people in the neighborhood that seem to be stuck, because part of the problem sometimes when you read novels or when you watch The Wire, you say, how are these people ever going to get out of this? And I noticed with Drama City and in The Wire, it seems like you've begun to use Narcotics Anonymous a little bit as a way for maybe some of these people to try to improve their lives.
Yeah, well, I go to the meetings as an observer myself, and it's very inspiring. And to hear the stories and to see that this kind of thing does work. And, I just believe that the best work that's being done for people that need help is in the communities. It's not going to come from the government. Don't look to the government to do these things for you, because they're not going to do it.
Right.
And I've written about these people in other books too. Is, you know, you've got guys who volunteer as football coaches, for example.
Exactly.
And Big Brothers and church groups. They have a program here called One Child, One Church, where the church actually adopts a kid in the community that's at risk, and they just keep an eye on them, you know, through the years, that kind of thing. And you can't go looking for big victories, because if you do, there is no answer anyway, right? There's
right.
No answer. So what can you do? Well, you can try and help one kid.
Right.
And you know, maybe one kid is enough. I mean, it's better than the alternative, right? And so I try and celebrate all that in the books, and try and show that there is hope, as long as you don't try to get too grandiose about it and say, you know, well, what's the answer? How are we going to turn the culture around? You're not going to turn the culture around, but you can make a difference in the life of one kid.
That's right. In fact, there's a line in Drama City where it says, it just takes one person to believe in you, Lorenzo says. And there's a lot of truth to that.
Yes. Think in your own life. I mean, you don't have to be from a bad place. I mean, think of a teacher that influenced you, or a coach, or something like that. Or even, you know, a lot of these kids aren't lucky enough to have a mom and dad at home, but just think of what your father means to you or your mom, you know? And that's as far as you got to go.
Absolutely. George, let's... is there anything else you'd like to say about Drama City? I think it's a novel you should be very proud of, and I think it's going to do very well, because I think it combines all the elements of the previous novels you've written.
It does have a strong female character, which is sort of a protagonist, which is sort of a first for me. You know, I'm just trying to show off my sensitive side.
Yeah, I like the twist. I like the twist that you have there. I'm not going to say anything about it, but it's kind of neat how things work out for Lorenzo, and he gets some help from some of the people around the neighborhood, and there is a good feeling that goes along with the novel, and I really enjoyed the novel very, very much.
Excellent.
George, now let's talk about The Wire for a moment. How did you get started in The Wire? I mean, I know David Simon was the one that... that originally got the idea going, is that correct?
Yeah, he's the creator of the show, and I didn't really know David, but I know his girlfriend, the mystery writer Laura Lippman. She's a very fine writer out of Baltimore.
Sure, I've heard of her.
And she turned him on my books. And he'd actually grown up in D.C. He was a Baltimore native since college, but yeah, he grew up a few miles from me, and he knew what I was writing about, and he recognized that there was a kinship to what he was doing in books he had written, like The Corner, co-written with Ed Burns, and Homicide. And so he called me up, and he asked me if I would like to write one episode of this thing he was doing for HBO that was coming up. And I looked at the pilot, and I was in. So I wrote an episode in the first season.
Mm-hmm.
Then he asked me to come on the second season as a story editor, which meant I had a job again, which I was trying to run away from my whole life, but I thought it'd be worth it and fun to try it. And I did that. Started going to Baltimore every day and going to work. And then in this third season, I became a producer and a writer. And so it's been
You should be. It's a wonderful show. My wife and I are hooked on it. And it's written from the, as a viewer, I view it more as a kind of a novel. You kind of have to follow the storyline, and you do a really good job of developing the characters during the course of the season. And it, to me, it does have a much more of a novelistic feel than a lot of the other things that I've seen on television.
That was David's intention. That's his idea, and that's how he sold me on coming on. He said nobody's ever done this before. It's going to be each episode is going to be a chapter in a novel. And as you know, we've managed to attract, besides Ed Burns, who's also the backbone of the show, we've gotten Richard Price and Dennis Lehane to write for us, and it's been a pretty cool experiment. I always wondered why television didn't get attract real novelists to work for them, because the writing would be better, right?
Exactly.
And we tried it out. And, you know, one of the reasons that they don't go after novelists is because they want to sort of control the writers in terms of the three-act structure and everything else. And novelists are really used to sitting in a room by themselves and not listening to other people until it comes to the editing process. But it worked out. I mean, if you look at the shows that Richard Price and Dennis Lehane wrote, they're very good shows.
I mean, you guys have three or four of the best, I think, the best best writers writing today for your show. That's an incredible cast of characters.
Yeah, we're lucky.
And I remember in the first season there was a scene with Dee, who was a character that I was very fond of, and they were playing chess, or the guys were playing checkers, and Dee came in and taught him how to play chess, and that was one of the best written scenes I've seen in a long, long time. I watched that scene and I was hooked. I said, "Now that's good writing right there."
Yeah, that was good. I remember that. It wasn't me.
Well, it was, but it sounds like it's a collaborative effort that you guys have there.
We do. We sit in the writers' room quite a bit and argue about things, it can get kind of bloody. But it's also at the end, you know, we always say, "Well, that was worth it." You know. I'm sorry I was mad at you, but that was worth it because it came out pretty nice.
George, where do you see yourself now? You've got Drama City, which is going to be in bookstores in March. You're a producer of The Wire. Are you happy with where you're at right now? Would you like to kind of maintain the status quo here, do you think? Or would you like to do a little more television or screenwriting? Or do you think you found the path that you're meant to be on?
Well, my first priority is writing novels.
Okay.
It will always be. I'll pick up work here and there, and along the way. But I want to keep writing books, and I want to get better at it. I mean, that's really my ambition. And to do that, I have to stay in the game, right?
Right.
A lot of people drop out for whatever reason, and so I want to focus on that, because if I get my head turned around, I've got a lot of offers to write for movies and television, and I could do that, but it would never be as satisfying as the other thing that I do. And of course, I want to take care of my family, too, so I've got to keep an eye on that. But I think I can do it writing books and the occasional other thing. I just finished writing something for HBO, Tom Hanks and Steven Spielberg, which will be the Pacific Theater version of Band of Brothers.
Oh, wonderful.
Yeah, I mean, it's really something that I put myself up for that. They didn't come to me because my dad was a Marine in the Pacific. He fought on Leyte in October 44, and I wanted to do something to honor my father, and I saw that they were doing this, and I jumped on it, and I've written 2 hours out of this 13-hour project that they're going to film next year. So that's the kind of thing I want to do. I'll do TV or movie work if it's something that's really I'm really interested in.
Beautiful. I'm glad to hear your primary focus is going to stay on the novels, because that's probably selfish, but I just love reading your the novels that you write. And on your website, Miriam pointed me to your website, and you wrote something there about music, and I just want to read it here. It says, I remember watching the older sister of a friend of mine dancing in her lingerie at the top of the stairs to Whole Lot of Love. She was dancing with a band, and the music was tuned up loud. At that moment, my life changed. And when I read that, I just laughed because I like what you said. There's a lot of good music that was put out in the 1970s, and sometimes it gets a bad rap.
Well, do you remember the first time you heard Whole Lot of Love?
Oh, absolutely.
That middle section, I mean, it was like, it blew your mind totally, because there was nothing ever like that before, right?
That's right.
And then to put that together with the girl dancing in her nightgown, and I was 13 years old or something like that, it most definitely changed your life.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Yeah, and I think that's one of the, sometimes when I'm reading your books, I've got a notepad sitting next to it, and if you mention it, a CD or an album that I haven't heard, I'll write it down. I'll go out and get it and listen to it, because I trust your taste in music.
Thanks.
I read a thing the other day, and it saddened me. It was in a magazine, and they said that with all this downloading and stuff, that eventually they're almost going to do away with CDs, that everything's going to be downloadable, and that only like 10% of the sales of music are going to come from CDs and cassettes. And so therefore, you really won't have record stores anymore. It'll all be downloads. And I thought, boy, what a shame.
Yeah, and it'll probably put an end to a CD full of songs, too. In other words, they'll be making music with an eye on just pretty much, you know, singles or one or two songs that you can download. There's no reason to have a 12 song cycle anymore.
Yeah.
And so albums that had a thematic resonance, even going back to stuff like Astral Weeks or you know, some of the Who albums and stuff like that, it's just not going to happen.
Yeah.
It'll never happen again.
And that's a shame.
Yeah.
Because there's nothing better than going into a record store, or even now going into a record store and just looking around and you know, picking up something that you haven't heard. Or, I mean, I'm sure we're the same age. I bought albums, cassettes, CDs. I mean, the same thing.
Yes. And to get it home and take the shrink wrap off and, you know, open up the gate and all that stuff, it was a very cool thing.
Yeah. And I hope that the younger generation never loses that. So I hope that's something we can fight, but we might be fighting a losing battle there.
Yeah, I think so.
Yeah. George, I'd like to thank you for your time today, and I'd like to congratulate you for your success on The Wire, and also I'd like to strongly recommend Drama City to the listeners. It will be the featured Book of the Month Club, and there will be more information on my website about that, the release dates. And George, keep up the good work, and best of luck to you.
Great, same to you.
Okay, take care.